So what I'd like to speak about is trying to work on our kavana in tefillah. Kavana, of course, means nothing more than direction. And it has a lot to do with the fact that we are not only focused, but we have some idea to whom we're talking. It's a very large discussion as to how we're supposed to think about God when we're talking to Him. But I want to really try to do almost a little bit of a workshop, give a number of different ideas, things that I know work for me when I'm able to remember them. And the goal is not to take in everything that we're going to talk about, even in a half an hour, but to try to find maybe one or two things from our discussion tonight that maybe can enhance your tefillah experience. I'm going to say one or two things that I mentioned before in the panel, but much of it is different. What can we do in order to find beauty and meaning in our tefillah? The reality is that tefillah can be a very deep and powerful experience. There's a story of a woman from Brooklyn, a real Yiddish mama, who goes off to India, and she goes and finds an ashram, and she comes all this way, and she schlepped, and she says, "I'd like to speak to the head of the ashram." And they said, "But you can't do that." "Why can't you do that?" "Because he's in a month-long meditation. A month-long meditation. And he just started. You'd ruin the entire thing if you went in." Which is a very nice answer to anybody, but not a Jewish lady from Brooklyn. So she barges in, and she's right there. His other assistants are sitting around him, and they're also meditating. And she says, "I just want four words with the man. I just want four words with the man." So they say, "Fine." They realize there was no way to get rid of her, otherwise she'd ruin the entire meditation. And she leans over to him and she says, "Bernie, please come home." And the reality is that all the great spirituality in the world, all that everybody's looking for all over the world, it really is from us. We're an Eastern religion. We're not a Western religion. We're an Eastern religion. We speak of the daily meditation. Right? We don't speak of services, we speak of the meditation. It's supposed to be a very powerful spiritual experience. And much of what people are looking for all over the world is really to be found within our tradition. So I want to give you, I don't know how many I got through, 10 different tips, and we'll see if we can cover a whole bunch of them. The first is what I mentioned before, this idea of making time for tefillah. Making time for tefillah. As with parenting, as with spending time with children, you can't have quality time without quantity time. And when we're talking about quantity time here, the difference between getting to shul a minute early and 2 minutes late, you're talking 3 minute difference, is an entirely different experience. And we all know what that's like. The only time I get to shul on time is when I mistakenly think that shul's supposed to start 5 minutes before. So I messed up the time and I show up there. And it happens on, it's the best of them that happens on Friday afternoon. And I get there and I'm actually on time or 1 minute early because I thought I was rushing into my new. We all know that experience. It's a totally different experience. And that's really more in our control than we'd like to admit. The ability to put aside time. This is time that is set aside for tefillah, to get there on time, to compose myself for a moment. A moment. It says, the Gemara tells us that the Hasidim HaRishonim used to take an hour. We don't need that. We need literally a minute. 60 seconds, as opposed to running in and starting, taking, as you're running, you take three further steps to start the Shemoneh Esrei. It's a very big difference. The second is, and I think this is also very much in our control, is looking forward to tefillah and seeing it as my time. As my quiet time. Believe it or not, we can really enjoy Shemoneh Esrei. You know what's great about Shemoneh Esrei? And it's even better when you're the rabbi of a shul. Nobody could bother you as long as you're davening. As long as you're in the silent Shemoneh Esrei. I always wondered, why do people daven so? What is this thing that people daven so? You can't get out till after the chazan finishes anyway. You can't be done with that part. So either I could be out of commission for 7 or 8 minutes, or I could be out of commission for 2 minutes. Why would I want to be? I made a deal with my shul a long time ago. You don't wait for me for Shemoneh Esrei. You know why? Because that's my time. It's the only private time I ever get is the time when I'm standing in front of the Ribono Shel Olam. Why do we want to rush it so much? Is Chazaras HaShatz so exciting that we want to make sure to hear every single word? Why don't we just relax? You know, it's the first thing I do when I try to daven, when I remember this, it makes a huge difference. I take 3 steps forward and I just go like this. I literally just drop my shoulders. And I say, I'm back, God. I'm here. I'm here. No one else can bother me now. You can help me. Nothing else is in my zone. Nothing else is here. It's meditation. It really actually can be that without using meditative techniques. And you can use that too. That's a separate whole session. Talk about meditation. But literally just to set aside time and to make it my time, make it enjoyable time. That'll make a huge difference in the way that we look at tefillah. And again, I'm not suggesting that you spend one extra second in shul. You're in shul anyway. You're just getting done with it so you can stare into space. Well, what's the point of that? Number three. If you do finish Shmoneh Esrei early, if you do finish Shmoneh Esrei a little bit early, so many of us have a practice to learn in shul, many of us have a practice to talk to our friends in shul. I have a very interesting idea. You see, there's this book, it's called the Siddur. It's called the Siddur. The Siddur is the most precious book in our lives. If you think about it. It's not Shas. It's not even a Chumash. The most precious moments of our year and of our life, the ceremony for a wedding, ceremony for a bris, Ne'ilah, they're all in here. This is really the most special book. And you know what? It doesn't get any cover. It's a poor book. The poor thing. It's just a Siddur. Right? But the Siddur is really the most precious thing that we have. All of Yiddishkeit, all of the things that give us meaning are in this book. If we're going to finish one answer too early anyway, and we're going to have time, did it ever occur to us to look through the Siddur itself when we're in shul? We spend so much time in shul. And there's a lot more coming now, if you haven't been through this one before. There's a lot of time. There's a lot of time on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So many of us who perhaps went to yeshiva all of our lives, we still don't know what a lot of the words mean. We still don't know a lot of the things in here. You're holding the English in your hands. You know how many opportunities we've missed to not pay attention to the davening, but to look at the Siddur, which is literally in our hands. And it's not such bad stuff on the bottom. And when you get done with this bottom, you take the Rabbi Sachs one, you do the bottom there, and the Rabbi Soloveitchik one. It takes time. We have to invest in our tefillah. And somehow we run to every other sefer first. Every other sefer gets priority over this book. This is probably the most important book in our Jewish lives. So that's tip number three. Number one is, again, to make time for tefillah, to show up. And again, I'm talking to myself with all of these things. I like to daven, I almost caught a Myrav before, but I like to daven after I speak about tefillah, because that's how long I can remember my own advice about tefillah, if I daven right afterwards. So usually I get one good one in over there. So to make time for tefillah, we're all here now for Myrav already. To look forward to tefillah, which is a strange concept, it sounds like, but to look forward, it is literally the best time of the day. I didn't mention, by the way, there is a fascinating piece in the Sefer HaKuzari. The Sefer HaKuzari says that the three tefillos are the Shabbos of my day. The Shabbos of my day. And that same feeling that we should have when we could really use Shabbos already. When's the last time you felt that? We sometimes feel that on a Motzei Shabbos. Boy, I could... When's the last time you daven Shachris and you're like, so long till Mincha, I don't know how I'm going to make it. I don't know how I'm going to do it. That's a long time. These three times, by the way, the worst thing in his opinion that ever was created was this Mincha Mayrav idea. You get to spend 3 moments of your day away from everything and with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we've turned it into two. We don't want to have a third one. We made Mincha Mayrav. Just go, boom, boom. Study tefillah. That's suggestion number four. Not just from the Siddur, and this you shouldn't do during davening. The best time to work on your davening is not during davening, because that's a time to be talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam. But take time to study tefillah, to study what tefillah is about, to study books, the books of Rav Pinkus, I can suggest, beautiful stuff on tefillah. Whatever the book is, study Rav Schwab on tefillah, many of the books there. Again, it takes an investment. Next. Those things, I think, are somewhat in our control. That's before we even get there or as we step into tefillah. Next. Make tefillah minimally a conversation. Minimally a conversation with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Just talk to him. And I have a feeling that there's so many times where we're in shul and he says, Mark, Yassel, Chana, just talk to me. I'm literally right in front of you. When I was a kid, I used to do NCSY up and down the Garden State Parkway. So I used to be driving up and down the Garden State Parkway, and inevitably, I'd get caught for mincha. I had like after school clubs, so mincha wasn't a big thing in those days that I got to daven. So, you know, when I would, I'd pull off on the side of the road. So we always have this cheshbon when we have to daven next to our car. Is it such a big chil Hashem that they'll think Jews are crazy and talk to themselves? Maybe it's better not to daven mincha at all, because who knows, they're going to see Jews are crazy. But, you know, you find a spot, and you pull over, and you kind of go a little bit behind your car, and we've all done this. You're kind of also looking around, you're kind of looking like you're not really. So eventually, what I decided to do was to daven in the phone booth. Remember those things? Anybody hear them? To daven in the phone booth. So what would you do? What would I do? It actually worked out really well in terms of both davening and people not thinking you're crazy. So I would take three steps forward. I would put a quarter in the thing. I'd pick up the phone. I'd say the whole shmones, right? I'd put it down, and I'd take three steps back. And I realized I was no longer so concerned about what people thought of me. And I also realized those were some of the best shmones I ever davened. And it was strange. I'm not suggesting this from a halachic perspective.
But it a long distance?
I thought, there are a few good jokes about that, but I thought, you know why? Because I was actually talking as if somebody was on the other end. When you have a phone next to your ear, you actually talk a little bit differently. I wasn't citing an incantation or something. I was saying, God, I could use this. God, I really need that. God, I really need that. And I found that, as we'll speak about in a few minutes, I said more in my own words that way also. So there are many things we can do for prayer. Sometimes we try too hard. Just talk to God. I have nothing against those who shuckle wildly. And I have nothing against those who... You know what I do when I daven? I just stand there and I talk in my own language. And I try not to use a sing-song. I try not to make it a sing-song. I try to just talk to him, simply. Just ask him for these things. Because as I said before, spirituality is not about being on some mountaintop or this and that. Spirituality is sensing that what I'm doing is interfacing with God. I don't need to get myself into a whole spiritual thing, and I could just talk to him. I can have a conversation with him. Okay. So I made some time, and I'm here, and I'm relaxed, and I feel like I'm talking to him. The problem that many of us face is that what we're saying to him is just not that meaningful to us. It's just not that meaningful. If it was really open mic stuff, if I really could ask God for anything that I wanted, I'd probably find it much more meaningful. I remember when I used to do NCSY, so we sometimes would interact with kids who'd never been in a shul, never ever been in a shul. And what we'd do is on Shabbos morning, we'd just put them in a circle and we'd say, okay, everybody, when I say so, we're going to take three steps forward, and then you're going to be talking to God and ask him for anything you want. Just ask him for anything you want. Whatever's going on in your life, just ask him for whatever you want to be when you grow up, ask him. Those are very powerful tefillos. Very powerful tefillos. Some writers on tefillah will basically tell you that if you can't add anything into your tefillah, you're probably not davening. if you have nothing to add, nothing to say. So the first thing that we could do if the text doesn't speak to us is we could actually add our own words in English, said in a normal way, to God. And those are some of the most powerful things. Just stop. Every morning when I daven Shacharis, in the bracha of Shema Koleinu, and there are rabbis who feel it's better to do towards the end of davening, and to speak to whoever it is that you go to, I take a couple of minutes, and I think, what's going on? What's ahead in the day today? And I ask them, in my own words, in English, the rabbis up there talking English to God. They're, you know, things that matter. What's going on today? And I talk to them about my family. I talk to them about my kids. I talk to them about this ridiculous election that's going on. I talk to them about these things. These are things that I'm thinking about. And I interface with him. Now that's even if I assume that the words are not what I wanted to say. The second thing you can do in this idea is to understand minimally what the bracha is about. You see, I'm not a believer that we can all have kavana for every single word of the whole thing. I can't do it. I don't have that kind of attention span for 4 or 5 minutes, or even 3 minutes, to think about every single word. You know what I try to do in the Art Scroll Sitter and the Korain Sitter? Right, they have on the top of each bracha, right, just one word or two. Right, this is the level of kavana that I'm going for. I don't know about you. Know which bracha I'm in. That's it. That is what I'm shooting for. I should know which bracha I'm in, and that can actually help a lot in terms of making the brachos meaningful. Because my mind is going to wander, but if I'm in the bracha of health, or I'm in the bracha of wealth, or I'm in the bracha of saying sorry, so can I try to find, in fact, maybe I can actually find some of the things that are, maybe it's actually almost not a game, but a challenge. How can I find in this stuff that was written thousands of years ago, how can I find where the things that matter to me are found in these words? Go for the themes. If you get stuck into Mager or something, you're going to get, it's too much for me. I can't follow every single word. But I can know what I'm talking to God about now. And sometimes that makes it more relevant for me. Number three, and this is the most powerful idea I can share with you, I know, in terms of my own tefillah. The reality is, ladies and gentlemen, that the substance of the brachos is probably not what we would have written. I have an interesting shiur where I go through and try to show why the rabbis picked these 12 or 13 themes for the center, right? Our Shmona Esrei is a couple of brachas in the beginning, a couple at the end, and then we ask for stuff. So we ask for a lot of stuff. I have to ask you, and we have to be honest with ourselves, how many of those things are things that we would really ask for if given a choice? We would probably ask for wealth, we'd probably ask for health. Maybe we'd throw up one, not Hail Mary, Chas V'Shalom, but one something for, and you know, Mashiach, would be a nice idea. Right? Help us. Here, we're going to find that, right? Something there. If we were given a chance to ask the Ribono Shalom for what we want, we probably wouldn't say these things. We have to be honest about that. Ingathering of the exiles. And again, part of this is where you're davening and when you're davening. For years, until I retired last year and became a rabbi emeritus, our shul had one minyan. It was 6:20 in the morning. That's an ungodly hour in every sense. At 6:20 in the morning, I don't really care about the restoration of judges. I don't care about the ingathering of the exile. I want to know, where's the coffee? And what am I doing today? Just seriously. Seriously, I'm being honest. I'm not thinking about that. Do you know that half of the brachos that we say in every weekday Shmona Esrei is about the redemption? Half? It's not like, and give me this stuff, and you know, it'll be really nice if Mashiach came. Half of the brachos are about national redemption. Are you kidding? So what do I do when the brachos don't speak to me? It's a famous idea by Rav Hirsch, Rav Shimon Shmuel Hirsch, that the root of the word to daven, right? We say we don't, daven is a separate interesting word where that word came from. Doesn't seem to be Yiddish, by the way. We know the word is lehit palel. Lehit palel means, the word, the root palel means to judge. Lehit palel is to do it to myself. During tefillah, I'm judging myself. What does that mean? It doesn't mean that I'm judging myself to think if I'm worthy for what I'm asking for. Doesn't mean that. Because the fact is, that's a real slippery slope. You ever have something in davening? My son asked me today this. Can I ask God for a car? Well, you can. But can I ask God for a car? So I said, you know, you only get so many requests, and you should prepare. If you were going before the president, you know, you would think about what things you want to say, and he'd take you more seriously if you asked for real things. So, do you ever have something that you weren't sure if you're worthy for asking for? I want to win the lottery, but I don't know if I'm real. I mean, that's like, you need a lot of merit to win the lottery. So, it's a very slippery slope. Rav Yosef Albo in the Sefer HaIkarim, written many, many centuries ago, says, you know what that assumes? That assumes that the stuff that I already have, I probably did deserve. And that's a dangerous place to go. I always try to remind my shul, right before Rosh Hashanah, that 95% of what we're praying for is that the things that we're blessed with should stay around. That difference between what I have and what I wish I had, realistically. So many of the things in today's world we have already. So what am I saying? The fact that I have, if I'm blessed with a family and a house and a car and a job, that I deserve. But if I'm going to ask for that, that's a funny place to go. So what does it mean that I'm judging myself? Let me give you a fascinating suggestion. I say it's fascinating because it works for me. If the words of Shmoneh Esrei, if the themes, forget the words, if the themes of the middle brachos of Shmoneh Esrei don't speak to me, I have to ask myself a question. Who's right and who's wrong? If those 12 or 13 things are not my priorities, and they're not, are my priorities correct? Or are the priorities of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah correct? Do you ever wonder if the time that we spend in prayer is time for us to get realigned with what it is that we're supposed to do and what we're supposed to pray for? Do you know that the less tefillah is meaningful to us, the more we need to say it? And when I hit a bracha, and that's not what I'm thinking, that's a wow moment where I say, why aren't I thinking about this? Maybe I don't care enough about national redemption. Maybe I wouldn't have put the bracha for slicha before the bracha for wealth and health. But who's right and who's wrong? That's judging myself. If tefillah speaks for me, I'm in the same place as tefillah. I don't need tefillah. Why do we have to daven three times a day? God put us on a spiritual diet. The reason why Shabbos is once a week isn't because we'd go bankrupt if it was more often. The reason why the reason why Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you know, we should go through this all the time. God puts us on a spiritual diet. We need a certain amount of X, Y, and Z occurring every once in a while in order to be in the right place spiritually. Prayer, it's a lot of time. Every couple of hours, my priorities go awry. Every couple of hours, I need to come back and say, this is what I should be praying for. And thus, the less meaningful tefillah is for me, the more meaningful it can be. And if all that fails, you can go back to what I said from Rav Kook, this beautiful idea from Rav Kook that my soul is always praying, and that even if it's not what I care about, it is what I care about. That my soul is always praying to God, and life gets in the way. And I don't hear what the soul is about, and I don't hear what the soul... It's a very exciting moment when, if you imagine this when you're davening, that you're actually hearing your soul talk. That's what your soul cares about. That's what the real me cares about. Inside. It's not just that the rabbis thousands of years ago cared about it and I'm a lost soul. No. My soul, really, this is really what I really want deep down inside. Let me just end with one practical tip. There's a sefer called Ha'aras HaTfila by Rabbi Uri Weissblum in Eretz Yisrael. And he says the following, and this is part of enjoying tefillah, and I'll end with this in a quick story. We're getting there. He says the following, and I'll say this too really brief, but I just went through this every time you're on an airplane. Okay, this is the craziest thing I'm going to tell you, but there's a reason why I'm telling you. Rabbi Uri Weissblum suggests we do the following when we take three steps forward. Have you ever gotten onto a plane during a storm? So it's raining, it's that whole thing. And you're like, I don't know if we really should do this. Does the pilot know what he's doing? Like, I don't know if we really should take off in this kind of weather. And they take off anyway, and they take off, and they're going. And then you're like in the cloud, and you're like, it's very dark in here, and does the pilot have to see? Maybe not. It's all, I don't know. You ask yourself all these crazy questions. And then, boom, you get through the cloud, and you realize that it's always sunny up there. It's really cool. He said, that's what we should think about when we start davening. We live in this storm of a world, and there's so much going on. We should imagine ourselves taking off. There's a really peaceful place where we can hang out with the Ribbono Shel for a couple of minutes. Couple of minutes, we could be there, we could just talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's not about doing anything, it's about taking things away. It's that sensation of going through the clouds and realizing that the storm's still going on. I didn't forget about the storm. I'm going to pray that the storm should get better, but I'm doing so from up there and I'm interacting with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Let me just end with one thing. Does anybody here remember Mork and Mindy? I know this is probably where you weren't thinking of. So, yeah, right? So now we're going to really separate the cell phone people from it. Okay, so I was very young when Mork and Mindy came out. I had to fight for bedtime to be able to see Mork and Mindy. So that puts me in a sort of whatever. It wasn't Pashut that I could stay up late enough to see Mork and Mindy. So at the end of every Mork and Mindy episode, Mork and Mindy was Robin Williams, a blessed memory. So Robin Williams was this guy who just dropped in from some other planet. And there's that like 2 minute thing that they could justify having two sets of commercials. So there's like the thing, and then there's like a 2 minute thing. I don't know if they still do this, and then another set of commercials. So that last 2 minute thing was always Mork checking in with Orson from the planet Ork. And literally, it was just a black background behind him, and he would just check back in with this person who had exiled them down to this crazy world to get him out of there, and he would just talk about what happened during his day and try to explain. It's not that much more difficult to daven. It's really not. It's checking back in. God put us down here. He put us down here for a reason. He wants us to succeed. He wants us once in a while to just check back in with him, because we get so lost we don't even remember what we're down here for. But we take a couple of minutes, drop our shoulders or drop our arms, and we say, I'm back. I'm back. And I want to once again interact with you. I want to once again remember what's important. You know, when you take three steps back, so everybody assumes they're leaving the office, right? Then you take three steps forward, you're entering the office. Take three steps back, you're leaving the office. If we've davened the Good Shmoneh Esrei, then we shouldn't imagine that he's in the office and we took three steps back. The whole point of davening is to imagine that he took our hand and we're leading him back out of the office. Right? I connected with you again. And that's what spirituality really is. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi. We're going to head back to the final components in the last 10 minutes in the social hall.
Thank you very much.
Oh, Mazel Tov.
Thank you. She always talks about the show.